First of all, let me add one extra thank you to the organizer and PI actually for doing that. So as for the Nia Yesh, I guess, Astrid and Bob for Rob for doing this is actually very nice. And also for giving the opportunity to see so many friends. I think it's fun. I hope that this is okay because I finished 30 seconds ago. And, you know, I hope it's not a random chaos due to the fact that I haven't slept all night. So with that, hope I'll be fun. And I'll think about a very controversial statement while I go. But in preparing the slides, I went through the list of the speakers, right? And I kind of realized, thank God, they're going to speak about everything I wanted to tell. So actually, you know, you're going to basically be the one filling up my slides as I go. So that's really great. And I will just do some filling. Also, I think it's your first talk of the week. I'm sure many of you are jet lagged. So this is supposed to be simple and fun. I hope so. So meaning of fundamental, safety using four dimensions, large end safety, safe standard model. This is where basically the various different kind of topics that were covered. And there were some that were not really, they're not really directly covered from that I could see. Those I couldn't put the names to it. I'm sure that in your, maybe if you have something to say, you will tell, you know, which of these parts you will actually also fill in. I also can see where the interest lies because some have more names than others. So I think it's fine. Good. That's the plan of the week. Now, the first question is, why do I do this, really? Why should I at all care about trying to extend even the standard model, given that, I mean, we all know the standard model does a good job, right? Like I said, I mean, I'm sure if when you write a grant application, you say, how do I write a grant application given that the standard model does work, right? Has that ever occurred to you, the problem? Yeah, come on, we can see this, right? I mean, this is the first controversial statement. How do you justify what you're doing? Especially when you have to compete against your string friends and say, we will solve quantum field theory. And you have to write, I need to do this because I like it. I can see some smiles, some like, shit, I just got the referee report, and so forth and so on. I mean, that's the way it is, right? So I would say that as a physicist, we challenge the status quo. I mean, we might be wrong, but we certainly challenge the status quo. So I would like to challenge the standard model because as a physicist, we need to test things. We can't really accept them, right? So first of all, what is the standard model? What does it describe? What does it fail to account for? What is the meaning of fundamental? And how can we extend the standard model? Why should we? I guess this is our role. I mean, how many controversial statements I can make out of this? 2 billion? This is kind of interesting to me because I did high energy physics because I want to work on fundamental stuff. Otherwise, I would be a condensed matter physicist. Probably a decent one. So, but you know, one thing is saying I work on fundamental stuff, one thing is say what does it mean. Fortunately, we have a well-defined mathematical statements about that. So first of all, what is a standard model? I'm preaching to the choir, right? So I'm not pretending that I'm teaching you anything. I'm just basically reminding myself what I've been doing for the past 20 years. Right? So far, this is an excellent description of nature. I mean, come on, seriously, I wish I had written the standard model. Right? Not even the people that wrote it thought it would be so good. And if you look at it, just the face of it is ugly like hell. Okay? SU3 cross SU2 cross U1. Bunch of couplings, and it works. Sometimes better be lucky than smart, right? So it accounts clearly for these forces. This is a bit cheap. It unifies weak electromagnetic forces. Well, maybe. I mean, it's just a low energy. I mean, yeah, you can say it does, but it's not really a true unification in the sense. single coupling. And it's a gauge Yukawa theory, that's also a fact. And it's renormalizable. This kind of little ingredients seem to do a hell of a good job, isn't it? Yes, it does. Sadly, it does. But I mean, why get you covered ears? Couldn't we thought of anything else? Well, in order to have gauge interactions, so you demand a log of symmetry. And that is a principle. You have never really proven it, but it just works. But if you just invoke gauge symmetries, can you write the standard model? Well, you will have a covariant derivative, so you will introduce a gauge coupling. But this is really. But you have interactions, they are not gauge principles. They come from accidental interactions. In four dimensions, you can just write them. So this is what you write for the X-lag interaction. And they only occur when you have scalars and fermions at the same time. They don't occur if you don't have both of them. So if you have QCD alone, you don't need Yukawa, you cannot write them. So scalars are immediately, you know, kind of providing accidental interaction. And in fact, they also, they're automatically responsible also for the self-couplings, right? That's also an accidental interaction. So I really like to think about that because having different type of interactions in my mind really helps distinguishing the type of physics I ever had. Now, this is the standard skeleton of a gauge Yukawa theory. That's the most general thing you can do, really. You have the Maxwell term, you have the fermion term, you have the Higgs interaction. Then if you have both fermions and Higgs, you can write Yukawa interactions, and eventually you can write Sartre-Skeletal interactions. Out of this, anything that's ever been done, depending on the space-time dimensions, really comes from a gauge Yukawa theory. So that's life. So I guess anybody can agree that it's a universal description of physical phenomena. Don't get fooled when somebody say, I do no Lagrangian theories. Non-Lagrangian theories is what people were doing 50 years ago before adding QCD. Okay, that's our non-Lagrangian theories. Means a strongly coupled theory, I rather prefer to use some non-Lagrangian things like symmetries. Right? I can use just symmetries to describe some stuff. But don't get fooled. There's nothing deep about that. Now, from the standard model point of view, what do we know? Well, the gauge structure is very much established. There's nothing you can do about it. I mean, you measure the couplings really well. There's nothing you really can fiddle around with that. You have a structure, you can actually say, I don't know everything about that. They just see recently direct coupling to the top. So there is still some, you know, room to maneuver in the Yukawa coupling. God forbids, you know, the forever anomalies are right. Ooh, there's going to be such a fantastic thing at 20 terabits, if you're lucky. If you want, I can give you a talk about just the forever anomalies, but probably you're not interested in that. That's where new physics could actually hide, for example. And then the Higgs self-coupling is not directly constrained, right? That's why you can still have the composite Higgs and you can have other stuff. But this is it, more or less, where the two blind spots of the standard model are roughly some wiggling into the Yukawa interactions and in the self-coupling things. Anything else? Of course, you can always hide it, okay? It has to be hidden very well. But make sense? Oh, I mean, please interrupt me. I mean, I want you to keep me awake. But it is a fact that it does work well, too well for our taste. Any questions so far? You're either completely brain dead or awake a little bit. Fine. Now, the another thing that you always say that, you know, we understand the standard model, blah, 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 we, you know, the hierarchy problem, about the mass scale of the standard model. And the masses, how natural they are. Let's assume you're a complete idiot. Right? You've never done a single experiment. By idiot, I mean educated idiot, but still idiot. And you only have measured the electron scale for example, through the pion decay.
So what do you learn from that? Well,
somebody has written for you the standard model because you're an idiot. So somebody smarter than you has written the standard model, but has never observed any particle of the standard model except, for example, some low energy stuff. And then you say, okay, I'm doing BSM now, right? That's all the idiots like me have been doing, BSM. So how do I know what is the new particle to discover? Well, the mass of the W would be a number times V divided by 2. This number is 123 times G. I never measured G, so. The mass of the X would be 345 times escape, dimensionless coupling. The mass of the fermion would be a dimensionless coupling times 174. Now, just, I wouldn't be so far off if I put all the couplings over the unity to what actually we observe. Now you can say, well, the Higgs is 120, not 345, so what? Right? When I was a kid, 120 was considered extremely heavy. Now it's considered extremely light. I can see Robert nodding. Right? So we went from 20, 40, 60, 80, and 80 was really extremely heavy. 120 now is considered light. So this is actually the ballpark of the standard model fermions, right? Pretty heavy one. There's another possibility. If you have a symmetry, you can have this coupling to be zero. Well, okay, seriously, the standard model light quarks and leptons to a, basically at zero order approximation, they're massless respect to the scale. I would have been so happy as an idiot to provide those predictions of 30 years ago. Because now they're postdictions. 30 years ago, they were actually predictions. Right? Make sense? So I've seen, I witnessed hundreds of papers written by the top, that the top was special. How many papers have you ever got seen that the top was special? Many, right? Is it special for an idiot that knows nothing about anything? Well, I didn't tell you what the scale is. I just measured it. The rest was just an idiot approach to an idiot version of an idiot standard model physics approach. Idiotic. I'm sure Steve will pound me with my English. Come on, Francesco, seriously. Okay, so this is fun. So just to say that if I just had been using the standard model, like I would have made a lot of good predictions. So how much I can learn from this approach? And of course, the standard model doesn't count for dark matter, dark energy, matter of antimatter, neutrino masses. I put it a star here because seriously, it's very easy to give a mass to a neutrino in the standard model. It's not a big deal. Add a couple of, and this is a controversial approach. You've been written that neutrinos masses are BSM physics.
Dark energy is easy to account. Also, dark energy.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a concept. You're right. I should put also a star here. No, absolutely. It's just a number you add to it. No, I mean, please, add as many stars as you want. So I'm not completely sold. I mean, it is new physics because we need to measure whether they're Majorana or not. But it's even an idiot can write the things after quantum field theory one. Interplay with gravity. I mean, I put a star not because it's trivial, it's because I don't know anything about gravity. that's again the idiot approach to physics. So that was actually a very brief introduction to my ignorance. Now, as I said, I want you to work on fundamental stuff, but I need to define for you what I mean the fundamental. I define to myself, right? And to tell my colleagues why I want to work still on energy physics rather than fundamental. Well, first of all, I can think in terms of fields. But remember, what was the big discovery for the quark model? Gell-Mann thought like, how do I actually put the pions into fundamental representation in this famous eightfold way? When I was a kid, it was the eightfold way. It was a fantastic thing to study. Now, students really never really studied that. But you know, it was like, you look at the pions and they make an octet of an SU3 symmetry. But an SU3 as fundamental representation is actually a triplet. How come you don't find a triplet? So you can just thought a little bit about it. So what if I want, and baryons also make octets, then you could find octets, decuplets, but you can find the defining representation of the SU3 group. So Gell-Mann like, nah, if I think that these guys are made of something else, and this something else then can explain everything else, it just uses the most stupid thing can possibly do. It must be the defining representation of some SU3. He did that half right, and then he got it wrong, then he also color, but you know, it was the right thing. So in that sense, if the defining representation of a group can be seen as a fundamental thing. Make sense? I mean, that's the way we discover stuff. For example, P3 plus one dimensions, you know, you can start as Einstein NSO3-1, which is the Lorentz group, but then a mathematician will come up and say, but that's not, you know, I can make the double cover of SO3-1, which is SL2C, and that group is even more fundamental than SO3-1 because spinners, multiplying to spinners, I can get the vectors, but not vice versa. So if Einstein would not have been a superficial theorist, he would have known more of these mathematics, he could have even have predicted spinners before Dirac. Right? Then, you know, we follow the historical route when we teach quantum field theory, and we start with Klein-Gordon, we start SO3-1, and then we discover the Dirac. And then we go, oh, but they're wild. But actually, we got it wrong, right? We should have started with SL2C, tell what are the basic the fundamental representations, and then build a quantum field theory on top of it. That would be a mathematical point of view. In fact, Penrose went in farther than that. He really said, maybe space-time at all can be seen in terms of spinners. And then, you know, differently from Penrose, this is also known as Penrose twister space, which I think is a beautiful idea, but it never really gone very far because the problem with that is, and I guess you guys know more than I do, is that the problem with that, you can't really do computations with that because eventually you don't know how to make the metric arise out of that. There are a number of subtleties there. But then, you know, all the people they do MHVs, they use this, basically. Kind of a sneaky way to write all the your amplitude in terms of spinners rather than vectors. Now, this is an example of fundamentality. I don't use SO3-1, it's SL2C, and anything else. I cannot build a smaller group with a smaller defined representation to derive everything else. And that's the beauty of it. I was sold to this immensely when I was a kid. So let's look at the fundamental, the various representation of SL2C. Of course, you can have scalars. Maybe the X boson is, X boson is certainly a scalar. Whether it's fundamental and not made of something else, we don't know yet. But if you were, it will actually enter into in this scheme. Then you have the wild fermions, which under SL2C, you can construct two types of wild fermions, one half zero and zero one half, right? There are two distinct representations of SL2C. Now, depending on how you combine them, you combine that one half zero plus zero one half, this will be your left-handed plus conjugated right-handed. This is your electron. Or you can just do that, one half zero plus one half zero star. And this is your Majorana Fermi. But you see that it's so stupid to put them together now that it's not that, it's not that these are fancy stuff. The Majorana and Dirac are fancy. It's just the way you combine together the representation of SL2C. I was so enlightened when I finally understood that I could never understand what the hell was a Majorana Fermi. And I don't know if you have ever, I'm sorry, this is, I have to let it out, even I'm tired and you're tired too. But have you read these books about what a Majorana Fermion is? These books like by this Russian, very famous physicist. It takes 50 pages to tell how a Majorana Fermion looks if it transforms. They're like, oh God, I don't know what it is. Then you look on the back of Wessenbach and say, oh God, it's just this. It's nothing particularly fancy. Right? I was actually losing my mind when I was reading that. And I thought I was a complete idiot. It took 1 year of my life to understand that it was trivial. Sometimes it's good to say these things because I guess for the younger people, everything seems that we understood so clearly. But you know, you really need to, you know, break your head against the wall many, many times. Gauge bosons, again, are a one-half representation. That should immediately ring a bell. This is exactly what you do with the ordinary SU2 spin when you want to construct the spin 1. You multiply together to one-half. this is not the right crowd, but if you're a string theorist, right, then you will have a gravitinos too, right? And then you could have a graviton, which is spin too. And I can, in principle, construct all of them at least as a matter of fact. I'm not saying I'm quantizing it, but the fields are clearly constructed like that, but just multiplying out representations. Now, the question is, and this was a beautiful comment made by Tooft, I don't remember where, but I think I read in his book, Under the Spell of Gauge Theories. How come we stop to, you know, typically one, and then two, we don't know how to quantize? Well, I mean, the point is that spin one, beyond massless spin one, you can prove that the theories are not normalized. That's just a fact, not in usual sense. That's the way it is. These are all, out of this, the only defining representation is the 1-0 and the 0-1-half. Sorry, 1-half, 0-0-1-half. All the others are derived. So if I were to be a fundamental physicist, I would say, okay, this is my defining representation. I cannot go lower than that. Anything else has to come out of it. So if this applies to space-time coordinates, this will make up the Lorentz group. And the 1-half will be my spin 1, my x mu. Or I can think of this as fields. I also can see also this gauge gravity duality, basically, they're all based on this, of basically this identity between what happens on fields over a brain with respect to coordinates in the bath. Fine. So there was meaning of fundamental in terms of fields. There's another field. And now I give you the fields. You choose. You can decide how much you want to be fundamental with respect to the fields, and now you want to think about how much you want to be fundamental with respect to interactions among fields. So, well, I mean, now the QED. QED, you know how to write it down, the Lagrangian, I don't have to teach that for you, and you compute now the quantum correction on top of that. And you find out that there is a famous pole, which we call a null pole. That doesn't mean that there is really a pole. Sorry. But clearly from this you can extrapolate a scale. So given some low energy scale here, you can always get another scale. And the scale is exponentially large, the smaller is your coupling. No matter what, you're gonna have a plot like this. Assuming that this persists, if you try to move the scale to infinity, the only way to make it that happens often is to go to zero. Now, you can always say, no, Francesco, I don't know perturbation theory, perhaps. It's an asymptotic series, it'll give me corrections. But to the best of our knowledge, it's Tessier-Landau pole. Fine, so this theory is trivial in the sense that, and this is a bad wording, I mean, what does it mean trivial? It doesn't mean anything. Trivial is in the eyes of beholder. What is trivial for me is not trivial for Manuel, I mean. But it just means that if you want to take the scale to infinity, the self-coupling needs to vanish. A better way to say it is that it is does not have a cutoff if and only if it's non-interactive. Now, what this means is that you don't want the low-energy physics to depend on the high-energy scale. Right, that would be very, very bad. Right? It means that you can no longer disentangle the ultraviolet from the infrared. Make sense? So now Wilson gave us a good way to look at that. He said, well, if you don't want this to happen, really, it means that the short distances, you would like not to have any scale. That is, if you don't want to be dependent on a scale, then it shouldn't be a scale. But that means that it must be short distance conformality. That is not true. It's enough to have short distance scale invariance. Right? If I just say it doesn't depend on the scale, it doesn't mean I have to be conform of the group. Good luck at finding a theory which is scalar, which is scale invariant, but not conformal invariant. So we go by the safe, using a safe attitude. Let's make it conformal. Better be safe than sorry. Huh? If it's conformal, we surely also is scaling Mario. Make sense? And we haven't found any theory that does that. And there's a long list of wrong papers on the archive. They tried to find one, but they couldn't find it. Somebody comes with a scaling Marian theory, and the other guy says, that's true, that's wrong. I'm not going to say who are these people. It happens every 2 years comes a paper. Yeah. Continuum limit is well defined, which if you're a lattice person, this you would say the theories a la Wilson are theories that you can put on the lattice. Because you can set the lattice space into zero and the theory is well defined. Lattice space is your, in principle, your UV cutoff. Now, it must be a complete UV fixed point. I mean, all of you knows what it means. It means that if you have many couplings and only some are safe, that there is really no need to call it a theory safe at all. By safe here, I don't mean just asymptotically safe. I mean more generally, a theory that doesn't have a cutoff. Huh? Cutoff-free theory. Huh? Now, the dimension of the critical surface, so if we calculate the number of dimensions of the critical surface, it gives you the level of productivity, you know. I can go more deep into that, but I'm sure that also Daniel will do that. Mass operators, I mean, anything which is a mass scalar is irrelevant. It's always relevant for the infrared. Otherwise, Steve is going to be pissed at me. We have different conventions. And it's irrelevant from the ultraviolet point of view, provided the anomalous dimensions are not too big. I mean, if I add something to your fixed point, if it drives away from the fixed point, good night and good luck. I have to say that this is a very delicate thing because you will find people which are very nervous if you have that not the ultraviolet directions go through the infrared. So this will probably be something for discussion. One of the controversial things. So according to this, the standard model is not fundamental. So be it. So you can do. It doesn't have to be. The fixed point particularly fancy. It can be free in all couples, right? So you can have computer asymptotic freedom conditions that are typically obtained in one loop. If you're Italian, you call them TAF. If you're American, you call TAF. Isn't it correct? You don't take responsibility for TAF?
Yes, TAF.
CAF complete asymptotic freedom. That's the way it was done. I mean, you guys change your name from CAF to TAF. I mean, that's the difference, but that's it.
It's so, FAF.
Yeah?
FAF.
Yeah, what?
Ah.
That's good. It's more like a name for a cat, but I understand that. So gauge coupling, you can show that the gauge coupling drives complete asymptotic freedom. And in infrared, you can have dynamically scale generated. The way to understand at least for two couplings is very simple. You look at the Yukawa self-coupling, and you have a little theorem that tells you no matter what, if you have an interaction with a gauge at one loop, the first term is proportional to alpha h squared, and this is positive. This will give you a Landau pole. But because the second term is always negative, there can be a region in the parameter space of your initial condition for the Yukawa that makes these two couplings completely safe. And indeed, that is actually the plot, right? So this is the line when this is equal to zero. It's not a fixed point, right? But it's a fixed line. And if you are in my conventions, just to be clear, you know, the arrows means I'm going toward the infrared. This is alpha G, this is alpha H, and I keep going backwards and go through the ultraviolet. If your nature is kind to you, and you sit here, means at a low energy, you measure your Yukawa coupling here, and the gauge coupling here, and then you extrapolate back, you're going back to a theory which is completely asymptotically free, at least in the Yukawa. And that doesn't mean it's completely free, because for that Yukawa, so you're in bad luck, there are also self-couplings. Let's just forget for a second. If you're here, then the gauge coupling goes to zero, but the Yukawa coupling has a Landau pole. It doesn't mean the theory is not good, but it's just the way it is. And now, if the Yukawa coupling persists, I can only say that this is an effective field theory at low energy. must be corrected. Make sense? Are you guys falling asleep? Or? Fine. I mean, you cannot tell me that I'm really, you know, I'm hitting you with that stuff. I'm just, you know, waking you up a little bit. Fine. And these are some old stuff, some more recent stuff, and there's also recent stuff we also done by studying these even higher orders. Okay, fine. So you can have kaf/taf, and then of course you can do something else, right? So you can say, well, what about the, you know, I am not really a kid. I can also imagine that rather than having a trivial fixed point, I could have an ultraviolet fixed point, which is interacting. The difference is this is an approach as a power law. This is approach logarithmically. And of course, you can also glue them together. So this goes down after a certain point, and then goes up again. But in that case, you have to change the degrees of freedom. So far, so good. I mean, this is the mathematician who say, no problem, Francesco. I think we are on board. I would say 90% will do that. The other 10%, they don't know what they're saying, so that's fine. So now we go turn a little bit to the model physicist side. And then you say, ha-ha, we don't want to go beyond the standard model. That's what you have to do. It's easy to go beyond the standard model. The point is, it's really, you know, the gymnastic, and now you have to do in order to make sure that everything's okay. This is a bit harder than you were supposed to do 20 years ago, right? In 20 years, like, oh, I think it works. Now, like, you know, I need to make sure that it does work. So I'm incredibly jealous of this guy.
Oh, you mean that's not you?
Oh, yeah, man, Rob, I mean, I'll buy you lunch, I mean. Even a huge beer, I mean, after what you say. I mean. I'm so proud. No, it's not me. I don't want to break your heart. And this, on the other hand, is what the average SUSE, a Technicolor person, or anything I've ever worked in the past 30 years, you know, feels now. What do I do, right? Do I actually jump boat or keep doing what I did for 30 years? By the way, this criticism applies to all communities, not only PSM. Every 30, 40 years, it's good to do something new. And I love this cartoon. Sometimes it's hard to open your hand, but you need to, right? I mean, so if now you've been doing super serious over so you're really kind of like, what do I do? So what would you do? What would you do, guys? Would you actually keep the prize with, you know? Of course, unless you're definitely sure that you're gonna win the prize and then, you know, your life is worth it. I think in any case, it's good to learn different things. Worst case scenario keeps your sanity in check. No. So what's so fast about the standard model? As you can see, I'm talking free. I'm not really containing myself. It's a gauge theory. It's basically numerology. As to 3 cross as to 2 U1. Nobody knows why it's that. And you have the Higgs. That is how the standard model gauge coupling do. Forget about gravity. Gravity starts here. But this is something that Alberto will like very much. The gravity doesn't do much to this transition here, right? And then you can extrapolate this coupling to a very, very high energy. At least for a while, the transition doesn't happen much. But you will explain that. But if you look at this coupling per se, they're very small up to very, very, very large energies. Okay? So, c'est la vie. And then, of course, the Landau pole takes over and, you know, the things go bananas. And the question is, do theories, that, you know, rather than being free or safe, exist? Yes, they do. Now we know they actually are not very, at least ugly looking. They're, after all, like QCD plus a Higgs. Nothing particularly fancy about that. I'm making this short because otherwise I'll bore you to death. They have a controllable, in this particular setup, a controllable ultraviolet fixed point that you can control in terms of this epsilon. And we were told, I mean, from very smart people at Princeton that this couldn't happen. Of course, Kasper was right up to only fermions and in perturbation theory, but then he does what every, you know, good theoretical physicist does. I mean, he slips on the banana slips by saying, of course, I assume that's true also for scalars plus fermions. If we were a mathematician, probably wouldn't have said that. Now, this is actually, as I keep repeating to myself and the others, this is not really this is not a sketch. This is actually a solution of the theory. You have indeed you observe asymptotic C. Okay. In this particular setup, and setup that Dani has been working too, I mean, these scalars are needed to actually, in perturbation theory, give you asymptotic safety. Non-perturbatively, you cannot. Very good. There is a scale here, which is an RG invariant scale that separates basically the regime of the two, the trivial fixed point from the ultraviolet fixed point. And that is, you know, it's not a scale that the theory gives to you in terms of a number. This number has to be fixed to experiment. Like in QCD, I can have QCD, but you won't tell me that somebody puts on the lattice QCD can tell you the mass of the product. On the lattice, they'll give you the ratio of masses, and then one is fixed to experiments. Make sense? You can generalize this theory even with gauge theories, with gauge Higgs's, and, you know, that can be very, very fancy. You can have a combination of fixed points, but I mean, now you can have controllably safe, you know, coupling. Now, one thing I kind of liked to explain to some of the colleagues is like you wear your shoes, you don't have your losses, and your shoes don't have shoelaces, so then they try to slip off of you, but if you, for example, put the shoelaces back, you can tie them. So in this sense, when you lose asymptotic freedom indeed, and you can rescue asymptotic safety by putting indeed you cover couplings. So those are like, you know, you want ties, I like the shoelaces on your shoes. So the Higgs for the first time is needed without superstability. Now, about naturality. So since there are some phenomenologists, let me call educated phenomenologists in the audience. There is always the question about naturality. Now, if you didn't, if you have a theory without a cutoff from the outset, this theory is technically natural. What does it mean, technically natural? It means that there is no higher scale to which you have to match anything. So once you give the mass of the Higgs in this theory, it's what it is. It won't be renormalized to some higher energy because it's kept fixed by the low energy conformality and the high energy conformality. That's actually a symmetry. In fact, no quadratic divergences can actually occur here. But if you add thresholds, like new masses of new particles, well, of course, you will reinstate the problem of naturality because you have to renormalize up to the next threshold. And that you can easily prove that's the case in whatever scheme you use. So it's not a scheme-dependent thing. Now, often there is this, you see a lot of papers being written for the past good 15 years, 10 years for sure, that, you know, we need conformality, conformal standard model. You know, nobody tells you what the hell that means. It's not that it's just a classical Lagrangian says conformal, means nothing. There is no such a thing like classical conformality. But, you know, it's like in QCD, you say the theory there is classical U1 axially is intact, but the mass of the other prime weights the mass of the proton. It just means that if you want to claim about conformality, you have to tell me whether it's infrared conformality or ultraviolet conformality. Ultraviolet conformality saves you from a potential cutoff in the theory. Infrared conformality tames the masses to be small. In any case, I can say that since the standard model is not a complete theory, that we need new thresholds. So with that, you know, as a theorem, I can say that in order for the standard model to be safe and natural, the new threshold must be close enough to the dietrophic scale. If you give away naturality, like split supersymmetry, then the scales can be whatever you want. Make sense? No?
I mean, it could be, around the TV could be several loop factors away from the TV.
So you were radiatively generated. There could be. So, but all I'm saying is that you can still invoke technical naturality. Right? So you have to do with loops, but you will have to, you know, you have to calculate those. And there is a trace in the theory. That's one. Now, what happens when you don't have scalars? Well, if you don't have scalars, I can certainly lose asymptotic freedom in QCD. Below this is the number of flavor, number of colors diagram of QCD. And this is what the community has been working on for the past 15 years. We'll go back to the status of the art of that. And basically, the top part of this was never really considered. Now, imagine, and there is a theorem that if you go just above this line here, you can't, and this is the paper of Caswell, indeed, you can't really have a perturbative ultraviolet fixed point. But it doesn't tell you anything about, the theorem doesn't tell you that you cannot have a fixed point above a critical number of flavors. If that is the case, then you can imagine to have asymptotic safety, a very large number of flavors, fixed number of flavors. We know the masses, in that case, the masses is a critical safe NF. You must have an unsafe region. That means that here are the theory confines, here the theory has a long distance conformality and ultraviolet triviality. Here the theory is an effective theory. Above the theory is an ultraviolet safe. It's a well-defined theory. This is what you can do with the current methods. For example, there's a large number of flavors. And Anas is going to talk about that. I'm going at this, scanning on that. I said basically all of you. But, and this is also the work with Alberto, which is also the generalization to Pascal had already done before. So this is using Pascal, it's nothing new here. Fine, and this is obtained by Risami, basically fermion bound. You can also calculate the anomalous dimensions of the mass, so they're actually tiny. I was surprised to find them so tiny. Because if you do this for QED, it's not the same. QED explodes in your face. For the anomalous dimension of the non-abelian groups, this is actually small. But there was no reason for that. It's not apparent. I mean, technically you understand why, but at least regionally you wouldn't expect. This is the conformal window if you had fermions in the joint rather than fermions in the fundamental representation. Fine. Now, I just want to show how long did it take for us to get a little bit of a glimpse of the charting fundamental interactions, a little bit of historical review to see how interesting it is that how this, you know, charting works. So let me just say that maps don't only allow us to go from point A to point B. Right? So if you have a chart of fundamental interaction, you can pick from there if you're a phenomenologist, but also add an extra dimension to discover exploration and insights. So this was the map of the world, one of the first serious maps of the world, made by Claudius Ptolemy in the 13th century. It didn't have the Pacific nor the American landmass. Nevertheless, it was extremely useful. You certainly cannot use that to bring your son to your friend's house. You'll get lost. But at the time, it was a fantastic discovery. That's what we have now. Right, of course, we don't like people tracking us. That's why we put so many regulations. The Americans discovered European regulate. I would love in the future the European discover and the Americans regulate. But thanks to GPS, satellite computers, and your smartphones, and NSA tracking you, now we have a fantastic, you know, Google Earth, which allows me to come here and not getting lost. So clearly, maps are good. So this is the way, for example, the phase diagram of QCD started basically being built in the past 10 years. When I started, I started a long time ago, but I mean, let's just make the story short. In 2005, this was the diagram of QCD. It was a line, very brutal line, a number of flavors here. This is clear, number of colors equal to 3. So it was a line. And then around 12, and this will come from Schwinger dice and computations, five, four times, sometimes an F. How am I doing? I'm done.
think you have 2 more minutes.
So I will just finish this fantastic presentation. So this really is going to be fun. Huh? So you have basically about 12, then you have freedom with that mass, and then freedom's lost. That was it. That was the diagram. Then in 2005, by playing around for different representation, which came from actually from string theory and orbifold stuff, so never throw away string theory, you start discovering that this diagram, by changing number of colors, number of flavors, and matter representation, start having very interesting features. For example, it could be conformal for a very low number of flavors. And that was as low as 2. Here you have to go to 12. That was the holy grail of working dynamics, because 2 Dirac flavors, I mean, the theory conformal was fantastic. It means you reduce the impact on the S parameter by an order of magnitude. That was the, I mean, I was lucky making that discovery. It became a bit fancier in 2006, where we could put all of this in a single plot. And this is opened the Pandora box of lattice simulations. According to Julius Kuti, I should have patented this diagram, because any opening speech of the lattice community was starting with this. It was fun. Interestingly enough, the people that got the planetary talk at that time were not the people that made the diagram. But that's the way life goes. This was also the first pioneering work on the lattice, and Simon is from around here, and since he's in Syracuse. Then after that, there are hundreds of lattice simulations came up. We also started realizing that we could do much, much better even from the analytic point of view in terms of perturbation theory. And incredibly, 4 and 5 loops in perturbation theory are still the state of the art of computing different quantities, like the anomalous dimension of the mass, of course, work extremely well. And now these dots here are all the lattice simulations that have happened, or most of them. And we're talking about hundreds of millions of supercomputer hours all over the world. That's by this simple map being drawn from 2005 and 2006, they've been basically starting up. I mean, you will be surprised that even 2 colors and 2 flavors in QCD was never really done. So when people ask composite X, they didn't know what they were talking about. Fine. Then, as I said, we dare to go beyond. Roughly 10 years later, with Daniel, we actually start looking at this, the phase diagram, if you want, of theory where asymptotic freedom was lost, right? And then you graduate, and we were lucky to discover this. And now we go back basically to QCD and say what happens above this line, and you find that it could be asymptotic safety. This is not as rigorous as the one with Daniel, is basically something that needs also to be checked, because when you look for zeros in asymptotic series, you need to be much, much more delicate and more worried about it. But the truth is that this is a recent discovery too, and lattice is actually. So I will actually just say that there will be a lot of contribution about the standard model, so I really leave it this part to you. And let me just, again, I did not plan to do all of this. But again, actually it was basically done. So first and foremost, there is no reason for the QCD to be free. So the Nobel Prize was given, but it was only studied in this region of the parameter space. Okay? So there is no reason that QCD can actually become safe rather than free. Which is something to challenging the standard model. Means exactly that. I'm challenging also the Nobel Prize given. If you say that you'd give a Nobel Prize for a sign in a coefficient, that's fine with me. If you say you proved asymptotic freedom experimentally, my bleep, bleep, beep. Because if you read the original paper by David and Frank, it starts by saying in the Bjorkin scaling limit, which means down here. But even gravity should count. That's the way it is. So you could, and it's easy to actually deform QCD. You know, there are a lot of colleagues that can add a lot of colors to that. Of course, it's important to test it. You can do through the large hadron collider, but you will only go up to a TeV, something like that. although there's still a study clearly of that. You can go through cosmic rays, and then depends when inflation ends or starts. If it's high energy inflation, then perhaps cosmology. For example, what is the one other question to ask? What is the original? What is the coupling? Why are the couplings at the, soon after inflation? We always, from the Kolbe-Tarner that we all probably studied, take the plasma to be the free plasma. So why? Where's the theorem? I never understood that. I mean, unless you know that's what happened, those energies, I can't tell. Good. Dark matter, this is the only thing I want to say, is that you can imagine that you have a freeze out around the depth scale, and but then your coupling gets smaller at low energy. And that's where you have Dirac detection, here where you actually have the freeze out. When people say the Wien paradigm is dead, they have a constant here. So over three order of magnitude, several order of magnitudes, you assume that actually your couplings are fixed. Now, if you take QCD, this wouldn't be true. So this is, of course, a spherical Kao approximation. So what the experiments do, at the very best, they set a bound on the values of the couplings at different energies, because they'll be running. So I hope that this actually has kind of ignited the appetite about what to do. I mean, we would like to explore different paths for a safe essential descender model, extend a number of super safe theories. You can have cosmological and astroparticle physical consequences, different implementation, radiative symmetry breaking, gauge gravity duality, gauge-gauge duality, safe QCD on the lattice, interplay with gravity. So I don't know. And again, I want to see in a larger context of charting fundamental interactions, because there is one is not mutually exclusive. Now, I don't know if you've seen this. Have you? I don't know if there is sound, though.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the spit. From my mom. That's Matt. Right, where was I? Again? Oh, now it's Leah and Samuel and mom again. It's like all sorts of forces are pulling at me. Luckily, I don't have to react to everything. I'll just do what the elementary particles do. Our universe is ruled by four forces. You know gravity, which makes things attracted to each other if they have mass. But there are also three other forces. The strong nuclear force that, through strong interactions between the quarks, binds the protons and neutrons together in the nucleus of the atom.
Ouch!
The weak nuclear force, on the other hand, forces things apart and can, for instance, turn a neutron into a proton, an electron, and an antineutrino.
Oh dear, not nice.
And finally, there is the electromagnetic force, the one with the photons that account for light, electric potential, and magnetism, and keeps the atoms in place. The four forces affect the particles in totally different ways. Let's try an example with an electron and a neutron. Gravity only affects stuff which has mass, and as the electron is nearly massless, gravity only affects the electron a teeny tiny bit. The neutron, on the other hand, is quite heavy and is therefore more affected by gravity. Get it? The electromagnetic force doesn't care one bit about weight. The only thing it cares about is electric charge, so we'll go up.
I don't know.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the spit.
So I'll let you listen afterwards. Now you won't know what's going to happen. Yeah, it's horrible. I mean, if this doesn't wake you, I don't know what it does. I mean, let me try. Ooh, it's very odd.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the...
But I'll just conclude. I guess Feynman is always right, so... So this is a very, very controversial state. Thank you.
Thanks, Francesco. So we're a bit over time. We maybe can take one question if we have any questions. Yeah.
So about the possibility of a complete field theory. So you said this is so identified, as far as I understand, this possibility with the existence of a fixed point. What do you think about limiting cycles in the presence of more than
If they exist, why not? I mean, I don't have any problem with that.
That case would not be a fixed point.
No, exactly. And the problem is, I don't know the existence of limiting cycle in four dimensions. I think in two, but in four, I'm missing. So, yeah, no. And the poor people that tried that have been pounded very, very bad. So it left a scar. But I don't want to, the thing what happened was that Ben Gristin and collaborators looked for a limit cycle by looking at fixed point up to five loops with the theories with scalars. And they thought they found it, but it wasn't there. And it's easy to get confused.
So what's the progress on the lattice?
You can just take it, put it there.
The lattice confirmation of the large NF thing, are they?
They're starting, yeah.
They're starting.
But they're starting. I mean, they've started. If I would be able to take all the junk I have on my desk, yeah, and throw it in and things, I would probably know more.
Right.
How about that?
Exactly. I mean, it would stop a lot of.
It's the syntactic galliancy.
Oh, yeah. We knew that.
We knew that. So I'll give you that. Yeah, is there any other question? I mean, but yeah, they're started, yeah.
This thing here is a bit finicky.
But hope it was not. too little for you guys.
How long will it take?
Depends on. I mean, it's a Finnish group that's starting. I think it's only this, when you start with lattice, it's at the beginning just. Why did you understand your lattice? Especially in complete, they're incognito like it is. Especially what is your sign?
That's
very, very
hard. Okay, oh yeah, take the mic. Okay, so that's
the clicker?